I guess you had the press come out to the site.
Oh, yeah. They used to come around about the morning time when the flight control team would come out first thing in the morning, go through all the teletype traffic, and also to find out whether there'd been any changes in the schedule. And then, of course, if there was no changes, and the simulation started at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, then they would be back in the car while it was. I think they used to let the car still run while they came in and checked. But they were fairly quickly off the mark. And so we'd get maybe some, news hounds would come out roughly around about the same time. And then they would ask a few questions and off they'd go again because they weren't interested in hanging about either. Incidentally, one of the astronauts, he flew and then he decided that he would, he got into a bit of bad odour at one stage because he decided that he could fly this thing by himself. That's the story I got. But
Scott Carpenter.
Scott Carpenter, that's it. Scott Carpenter was a very avid horse rider. Apparently, he tied the horse up to a veranda post, which was a bit rickety, and the horse reared up and pulled the post, broke the post or did something, and part of the veranda came down and landed on Scott's head, and of course that was left a bit of a mark. But he was okay, but it could have been a lot worse, I know. He was a very interesting guy to talk to. I asked him what he felt like in himself about flying in a spacecraft. No, did he worry about whether that something might happen? Mm. He said, look, I'm a test pilot. The number of my friends that have augured into the ground while they've been testing, and they might get a quick mention in the local paper that so-and-so just fell off the twig or crashed or something. He said, but if I'm flying one of these spacecraft, he said, if I go down, he said, it'll be worldwide news. Not that he'll be around to read them. You know, each of the astronauts, well, obviously had their own personality and their own way of doing things. Wally Schirra was pretty definite in his way. I remember the Albany doctor was blowing. You've heard of the Albany doctor. And the flight control team were getting everything prepared, ready for the upcoming mission. And the admin officer, he decided he would take a shortcut rather than going around the building from the toilet block and coming in through the normal door. He would come in through, there was a door immediately at the end of the room where the flight control team were.
Is it just right next to where they were sitting, between them and the comtech? Right.
He opened the door and this gust of wind blew in and papers and crap went everywhere. Well, poor Wally Schirra got to work on this guy and I think he reduced him to a trembling mess. But Gordon Cooper, I think, was a bit of a free spirit, would be a good word. And I'm trying to think of the Australian Aeromed, Warren Bishop. Mm. And he and Warren were great friends because Warren was in the Air Force. So when there was a bit of a lull in proceedings, they would head off back to I think it was Melbourne, the Air Force base down there. And anyway, cut a short story long. At the end of the mission, Gordon was supposed to get on the first available flight and get back to the States to join in the Mutsi Parade, Victory Parade or what have you. And I had a call from Goddard, and they said, where is Gordon Cooper? And I said, oh, I thought that he was on his way back to the States. He said, he hasn't arrived, and we've checked the airport, and there's no sign of him. He hasn't even been booked on. Where is he? And they said, it's urgent. We want him in the parade. Why they picked on me was because ground communication coordinator, you're supposed to know everything. And I said, oh, I don't know. He said, well, find out. And left it at that. So I thought, what am I going to do? And I suddenly thought, I bet he's with Warren, I'll ring Warren Bishop. So I rang Warren, and he said, Gordo is at about 30,000 feet, and he's flying a meteor or something, which he hadn't been qualified to fly. And I said, well, get him down. He said, there's no way you can get Gordo down if he wants to fly, he'll fly. I told him what the score was. And anyway, I thought, now how am I going to tell the people back at Goddard what's happening? So I concocted a bit of a story that was he'd returned to the Air Force Base and he wouldn't be contactable for a while. And they then blew a very long fuse. You tell Gordo Cooper, that he is immediately to ring us on his return, and he is to advise us at every point that he changes planes or changes flights or changes anything, so we'll know where he is. And I thought, oh, well, that's a good thing for a GCC. An STO-1 to be telling the an astronaut what he should be doing and not. And so anyway, I thought, oh, well, Warren's a pretty good friend of his. I'll let Warren do the talking. But Gordo wasn't in very good odor with the people who were trying to organize the parade. And I never did find out whether he was at the parade or not, but I know that he did conform to what the instructions that he was given. There was another story too. Apparently he got back. They got in a car to drive to the airport, and on the way they got a flat tire. And by the time they got it all fixed, apparently Gordon said, well, I've missed the flight. We might just as well go back to the base. So they turned around and went back to the base. This story went over a couple of days. It was but it just showed what his attitude was. To he did what he wanted to do at the time that he wanted to do it.